You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
I'm Grace Gary Medicine Eagle Reed. I am broadcasting Negotiating Dramatic Events, a new show on KBOO, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. I am a social justice activist since the 1960s. The purpose of the show is to make life more wonderful for me and the people around me. And I'm 80, and I'm going to take my elderliness and share what I have found so that everybody can be seen, heard, and understood. Negotiating Dramatic Events, the third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Thanks for tuning in. Really appreciate KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is now on Venmo. Follow us and send a donation anytime at KBOO Radio. That's at KBOO Radio. Thanks.
KBOO.
Welcome to Out of the Streets of Portland, a podcast produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, focused on sharing the stories of people who are currently or formerly homeless in our community and sharing the services available to help people move out of homelessness and back into stable, supportive housing. If you need help connecting with shelter, housing, or other services, please call 211 or go to 211info.org for the most updated information. On this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland, we bring you a panel discussion about the Regional Long-Term Rent Assistance Program, known by its acronym RLRA, or ARLA. The program is funded entirely by the Supportive Housing Services Measure, which was passed by Portland Metro voters in 2020 and was implemented beginning in 2021. ARLA has been a key factor in helping people maintain stable housing, providing rent assistance to the most vulnerable households. In 2024, the number of households using ARLA vouchers in Multnomah County increased by 53%, showing the program's success in facilitating new placements and helping more households secure long-term housing. Since the inception of ARLA in July 2021, the program has helped nearly 1,000 households and over 1,400 individuals secure stable housing in Multnomah County alone. Over the past 3 years, the program has steadily increased, providing support for more households to move out of homelessness and into stable, supportive housing. We go now to an excerpt from a session about ARLA held at the Spectrum Conference organized by Multifamily Northwest in September 2024, featuring Chelsea Blair from Washington County, Aaron Goldwater from Multnomah County, and Jake Kirsch from the Housing Development Center, among others.
What is ARLA? It's the Regional Long-Term Rent Assistance Program. We call it ARLA, even though it doesn't quite work with the letters, because it's just easier to say. So if you hear people say ARLA, that's what they're talking about. So it's a local voucher that's with the tri-counties of Portland, so Multnomah County, Clackamas County, and Washington County. Each of the county's housing authorities pay out the ARLA rents to property owners and property management companies, and all households with ARLA vouchers have an assigned case manager who helps them with individualized supports and making it easier for them to achieve housing stability. So the ARLA voucher has some special supports attached to it that make it a little bit different from other federal voucher programs that you might be aware of. These include the risk mitigation and landlord liaison programs, and we'll go into more detail later in the presentation on those. So to get a glimpse of the scale of the ARLA program, we have some high-level stats here. The program distributed over $40 million in rent in the last fiscal year, served over 3,000 households in over 1,000 properties. And we also added 494 new properties across the three counties in the last fiscal year. So we've been making a lot of impact in our communities. Okay, so we wanted to get to your information to understand why the ARLA program could be beneficial for tenants and property owners. ARLA voucher uses the HUD income limits based on fair market rates in the area. So households with an ARLA voucher can rent any unit within the Tri-County within 120% of the fair market rate in their area. The program also offers incentives to landlords to work with ARLA households, which we'll get to in more detail. Okay. So some of the history of where ARLA came from. It's a program that was approved by Metro voters in 2020 with a ballot measure, and it's funded through 2030. It provides long-term housing rents and wraparound case management for all ARLA households, so households with an ARLA voucher. The primary goal of the program is to prevent and reduce homelessness, reduce the barriers to housing for the most vulnerable in our community, and address the issues of rising housing costs, and promote racial equity for communities of color. So when it was created for two populations in mind, which they called Population A and B. So Population A is defined as a household that has very low income, they have a disability, and they are either currently homeless, in imminent risk of homelessness, have experienced long-term homelessness, or are fleeing a domestic violence or other life-threatening situation. So anyone who falls within those criteria are eligible for long-term ARLA vouchers and get the ARLA voucher through the coordinated entry system of homeless services. We also have Population B, which are households who only meet some of the Population A criteria and not all of them. So you have to meet all of them to be in Population A. And people who are in Population B are eligible for medium-term vouchers. Normally, these are called rapid rehousing programs. How does someone get a voucher? I touched on this. Every county has to have a coordinated entry system. There are three different names for the coordinated entry system, but everyone can find it calling 211. They'll have their area, and then they'll take a phased assessment. It takes up to 30 minutes to get that type of information about their homelessness status, their income, all that type of stuff to see what type of programs they're eligible for. So they'll be on a big wait list similar to Section 8, and eventually they'll be connected to a case manager and they'll get an ARLA voucher. So there's lots of different service providers. I work in Washington County. We have 22 service providers now, and they are all providing case management services, including culturally specific services. So there's a lot of different opportunities and options for different providers that they can be working with. So the assigned housing case manager gets assigned once they get off that waiting list. They'll help them get their voucher, and then they'll start the housing navigation process, which is basically just trying to find an apartment, like you and I would. And any apartment that is affordable, so within that fair market range, they can move into. And so that's the process of how they get there. I see your hand.
How long is the wait list? Is there expedited priorities to people who are in more imminent need?
Yeah, so for all the coordinated entry systems in the Tri-County, they all have a prioritization schema or algorithm. It's not first come, first serve. It's the highest vulnerability first. And I could go through some of them. They're a little bit different county by county, but it's generally people who are most vulnerable. So the elderly, families, domestic violence, all that stuff.
So as follow-up questions, let's say we have a family who has about a 10-day notice, they're about to get filed on, like they lost their job. Is your organization, would be like, call RA, file an application? Like, would that be something that could help them, more immediately, or is it like
Generally, I mean, it depends on their level of vulnerability and what they're matched to. So it could be fast, it could be slow, to be honest. It's really a case-by-case basis. But they definitely absolutely have to do the phase assessment first to get into the system. So that's always their first step, and that's through coordinated entry. I know in Washington County, it's called Community Connect. But you can call 211, and if you ask for how can I get into housing programs, they'll talk about the phased assessment, and that's their first step. Now it's Erin.
Now it's me.
There is a wait list. Because it's not first come, first serve, it's by basically priority of your vulnerability level. It can really vary. I mean, some people who are low on the list, so to speak, it's going to be a while before they're matched. I think Washington County is around in the 200 range, and it changes every day. So,
what's the capacity? You mentioned that there are 3,094 vouchers. What's the total capacity of the program?
Each county has a goal amount, and there's a difference between long-term and medium-term, so some like shorter paid rents within like a year or two. It's kind of like a job program. Washington County is getting close to full, but not quite full. Clackamas, I think they're in a similar boat. Multnomah.
We are going to be expanding access to ARLA vouchers very soon.
Yeah, so it varies.
What's that capacity right
now? Getting there, but not quite.
So I guess I'll just add a little bit of context. Again, Erin Goldwater, I work for Multnomah County. And so with the Metro SHS measure that kind of led to ARLA vouchers, there was a goal to create, I think it's 5,000 new supportive housing units or opportunities. And so the ARLA voucher is one way that the counties are trying to reach that goal. And it is kind of different in each county. So as far as the strategies that are being used to meet that goal of 5,000 new supportive housing opportunities. So once folks get a voucher, kind of as Chelsea said, I'm going to talk about the voucher and then also like why ARLA is different and why it works is because of the supportive services. So first I'm going to talk about the voucher and some kind of specifics and then kind of the support services. So the voucher itself is each county's housing authority is the one that issues the voucher and pays the rent on behalf of the participant. With this program, it's similar to other programs, but the participant pays 28.5% of their income towards rent rent and utilities. So if they don't have income, then the voucher will pay 100% of that. If they do have some income, then they would pay 28.5% of their rent. All of this information is on kind of the award certificate or the voucher, and that kind of communicates with the participant and with the case manager the rent payments. If the participant has zero or very low income, then they also could get a utility payment, kind of reimbursement to help pay with those expenses as well. So now we're going to look at the kind of the three main documents that as a property owner or property manager or landlord kind of you would see. So the first one is the request for tenancy approval, or the RFTA. And so that is where the housing authority gets information about the unit, the utilities, information about the unit, so what amenities there are, kind of what the address is, and then they schedule a inspection because we want to make sure that the unit is safe and habitable. Unless it is a LIHTC kind of property, then an inspection is not needed. And so the second form is the lead-based paint disclosure form, which from my understanding is very common kind of regardless of the program. And then the third one is the kind of the ARLA contract, or the agreement for rent assistance. And that is what is used to set up kind of rent payments. And kind of a teaser, it is a very critical piece of the program that Jake is going to talk about. So that's kind of the specifics about the voucher itself. And then why ARLA works, or what makes it kind of different than like a Section 8 or a housing choice voucher, is that it comes with supportive housing services. So as Chelsea mentioned, the county's contract with support with service providers, with nonprofits who provide these supportive services. So similar in Multnomah County, it's over 200 different like nonprofits or even departments within our county that provide these like targeted supportive services to support participants in getting into those units and reaching housing stability. So the services promote housing stability, connections with the community, and just general well-being and improving quality of life through ongoing case management. And so with this long-term rent assistance, there's also long-term kind of support services. So unlike rapid rehousing, where it's, you know, a month to 2 months of, not 2 months, 2 years of support, this is kind of indefinite for as long as the household needs the rent and needs the support services. So again, the why it works and how we know it works. With ARLA, there's a 92% program retention at 12 months. And so those that, and the data shows that those that are exiting, many of them are exiting to permanent housing, other permanent housing that's not ARLA, and they are not returning to homelessness. So it's a demonstrated success, and why. Like, you get the rent assistance, that's one piece, but really the important part, I think, one of the important parts, are the support services. And so the work that case managers and service providers are doing. And so what do these support services look like? It's helping with getting folks into housing, so removing some of those kind of barriers into getting units. So whether it is working on clearing like rent arrears or getting the documentation ready, there's a case manager who is supporting through that process. I'm just kind of going off the cuff here now. So one thing though is that the support services are so individualized, everybody's needs are so different and unique, and so there's a wide range of supports that are provided or referrals that are made. And so kind of what is up here is not necessarily an exhaustive list. And that is, it speaks to kind of the dynamic skill set of case managers who can find their resources and support participants. So once folks get into a unit, then it's kind of that the transition of support services moves towards housing stability, kind of reviewing the lease, the expectations of living in an apartment, the expectations of, how to keep a unit, what are the agreements on the lease as far as noise violations, and so just being there to support participants throughout that to maintain their housing stability. And there are two different kinds of ARLA vouchers. There's a tenant-based, which stays with the tenant and can move throughout different units, and there's a project-based ARLA that stays with that unit. I believe that the majority of ARLA vouchers and are tenant-based. So I'm going to quickly just jump to the next, to Jake, just so that we can get to all of that, because I think I mean, just doubling down on kind of why this, I am totally biased, but why this program is so great. You know, you've got that long-term rent assistance that you can apply to a market rate unit. You've got support services through a case manager, and you have access to the risk mitigation program.
So real quick, everybody's kind of touched on the risk mitigation program. It's available to any landlords who are renting units to somebody who's using a ARLA tenant-based voucher, or if you have project-based ARLA vouchers at your properties. As the administrating organization, HDC's role is to process those claims. So there are kind of two buckets to what's available from the risk mitigation program. The kind of most used one thus far is the physical damage side of things. So if damages are caused by the actions of the ARLA voucher holder or the person living in a project-based ARLA unit, in most cases, those damages would be eligible for reimbursement from the RMP. Again, it needs to be, you know, I like to use the example of a stove fire that sets off a sprinkler system that causes water damage. That's clearly the actions of that household. But if a pipe bursts in the wall and causes damage, and the pipe bursting in the wall was deferred maintenance or faulty plumbing, that's not going to be something that's the tenant's responsibility, so it wouldn't be something that you could come to the RMP for reimbursements for. So, and it's anything beyond normal wear and tear, and that's pretty much anything other than, you know, touch-up painting, spot cleaning of carpets, things that happen all the time. Pretty much everything else, replacements, repair of items that you wouldn't expect to have to replace during tenancy or after. And that's really important to note here is that the ARLA program is designed to not only house people with the most barriers to housing, but to keep them housed. So the RMP is used, and we want to use this more and more this way, to prevent evictions, to prevent tenants from getting charges on their ledgers and having collections. So it can be used during tenancy, and we would like folks to use it during tenancy. There's no requirement that you have to wait. On the operational loss side, I think the big one for you all to know about is up to 90 days worth of the tenant's portion of rent, if it's unable to be paid, could be accessed through the RMP. There are a couple cases in which you might be able to get the full rent, but those are going to be limited to after a tenant leaves. So in situations where they've already left, if there's turn time that it takes to turn the unit because of physical damage and you're not getting the full rent from the housing authority, that could potentially be eligible. Legal costs, if an eviction does, you know, as much as we're trying to prevent evictions or legal action, if it does need to happen, legal costs could be an eligible item depending on the circumstance. What's not covered, I pretty much already said it, just the normal wear and tear. If the damage isn't caused by the tenant, common area damage is eligible in this program, so things outside of the unit. In the amount of time I have right now, I can't get in all to the nitty-gritty, so I can follow up with folks about this. But there's going to be need to be some evidence that it was that tenant that did the damage, because we won't be able to tell that through the invoicing or anything else like we would for damages within their unit. And on the operational side of things, any rent loss, if you're on the project-based side, that's happening during the initial lease-up wouldn't be eligible, and any unpaid tenant rent beyond the 90-day cap would be ineligible. So quickly, because I think probably most folks are working with tenant-based ARLA vouchers or would be, the limits. There is no limit to the amount of times you can make claims, but there is a dollar limit per claim and per tenancy. So it's $5,000 as the policies currently state. And that is for the tenancy of the tenant using the voucher. So if that tenant, if you hit that $5,000 limit and that tenant eventually leaves that unit, and you as a property manager or property owner have another tenant move into your property using an ARLA tenant-based voucher, that new tenant would allow you access to up to $5,000 during the term of their tenancy. So there's technically no lifetime limit. It's a tenancy limit and a per-claim limit. The other thing to note that I didn't mention before is we can do multi-unit claims. So if damages occur in the unit related to the ARLA voucher, but they impact other units or common areas or exteriors, we can do up to five units. So you'd be able to access up to $5,000 per unit, up to five units if there's a bigger situation that occurs. I'm not going to spend time on this one because this is pretty a little convoluted, and we don't have time to go over it in detail. But on the project-based side of it, if you have project-based units, the limits per claim and the lifetime limit for the property are much different than the tenant-based side. They're higher claim maximums, and the property limit is based on how many ARLA tenant or project-based vouchers are at the property and what type of units they are. So thank you. Thank you all.
That was an excerpt from a recent panel on regional long-term rent assistance, or ARLA. More information on the program can be found at our website, johs.us, in the Supportive Housing Services section. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Out of the Streets of Portland. This podcast is produced by the Joint Office of Homeless Services, a Multnomah County department with funding from the county, the city of Portland, metro, and the state and federal governments to house, shelter, and provide street outreach, navigation, employment assistance, assistance obtaining Social Security income, and case management to people experiencing homelessness in our community. Please subscribe to our podcast to get notified every time a new episode is posted. You can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by searching for Out of the Streets of Portland. And you can find this podcast, along with a ton of information, data, and reports, on our website, johs.us. Thanks again for listening to Out of the Streets of Portland.
You are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
This is Bird Note. This sweet voice belongs to the purple martin, the largest swallow in the United States and Canada. It's also one of our most beloved birds, judging by how many people put up nest boxes for them. By October, nearly all the purple martins that spent the spring and summer visiting North America to breed are headed back south, a long way south. In the fall, large flocks of martins end up all the way down in the Amazon basin, and some will continue even farther south from there. Purple martins from western North America will go all the way to southeastern Brazil, traveling more than 5,000 miles in both spring and fall. But why travel so far each year? Scientists believe that purple martins were first a South American swallow species. Over time, they evolved a seasonal migration to North America because the longer days of summer sunlight provided extra hunting and feeding opportunities during nesting season. This same evolutionary pattern likely applies to many of the other tropical migrating songbirds that make their way north and south on their epic journeys each year. For Bird Note, I'm Ashley Ahern. Every Friday, Bird Note email subscribers enjoy the most colorful message they'll get all week, with beautiful photos, links to upcoming episodes, and info on our special features. Sign up this week at birdnote.org.
You're tuned to listener-supported community radio KBOO, Portland, Oregon, in the beautiful Willamette Valley.
I down all in the ground, I'd root that mountain down, and I wish I was a mole in the ground.
Tune in to KBOO Monday morning.